Tonight's episode of the Science Enthusiast Podcast is brought to you by Monsanto. Oh, were you not jumping in there?
Oh, I was just going to let you just go and start introducing us because there's nothing else to say.
I guess you're right.
just say who we are.
Hello, and thank you for listening to the Science Enthusiast Podcast. My name is Dan Broadbent, and as always, I'm joined by my brilliant friend, Natalie Newell.
Hey, see, I didn't do what I said I was going to do last week and just write something shitty for you to say about me to, like, you know.
Oh, see, I already forgot about all that.
You forgot. See, because last week was last week. I mean, time, who cares?
It
happened.
An eternity ago.
It was a while ago. So, yeah, I think it actually was a week ago that we recorded our last intro to this. So why would I expect any, you know, continuity of thoughts from one episode to another? This is all just
I mean, if you're listening to us with any expectations of anything, I think your expectations, I mean, either will or won't be met. Those are the two options, I guess, right?
Yeah, because
that's science.
Or somewhere, or is it just somewhere in the middle where they're just like neutral? It's okay. I mean, at least this episode we have Andrew Torres, who's going to, you know, dazzle our audience with all of his intelligence and
the verbosity that is Andrew Torres. That you never get a short answer on anything.
Andrew Torres knows his shit.
He does, and I mean that's the lawyer in him or attorney in him, I guess. What's the difference between lawyer and attorney anyway? We didn't ask him that.
They're not the same.
I don't know why. I thought they were the same thing. And
I thought they were synonyms. And, no.
I thought legal definitions of things are very important, so I would imagine that there has to be some sort of differentiation. I would assume I always hear defense. Well, you hear defense attorney, though, don't you?
Or is it a defense lawyer? I just thought they were the same, and I thought that attorney was a fancier way to say lawyer. I don't know.
Well, then why say lawyer?
Why say anything
in the first place?
I know. Are you Googling this right now so that you can, like, come up with an answer on the spot for me?
I mean,
what is the difference between lawyer and attorney? Go, quick.
I could, but then we would continue to be derailed from.
Yeah, we don't want to derail. We don't want to derail. And you know what? If anybody wants to just answer that question for us, you know where to find us on the internet. So, you know, send hate mail, send love letters, send the difference
money
between an attorney
to patreon.com/TSE podcast, TSE.com or no, TSE.com, whatever website that is. Watch it be like some sort of like awful like porn site or something. And now I'm like,
you're just sending people
to
porn.
He was promoting this awful website. I listened to the show up until that point. And apparently we have Mickey Mouse offended listening
to
our show.
It's either Mickey Mouse or some like old church lady who's clearly been listening to our show since Ken Ham showed us on the art.
Since Ken Ham promoted it. He said, Science Podcast. Yeah, I'll check that out.
And this lady's like, I love this shit. And she like listens in secret. You know, she has her earbuds in while she's like on the arc doing something, but she's listening to us. But then you just lost her right now. You lost whatever her name is. Mary. Her name's Mary because it's biblical. That's it.
Well, I went to TSE.com, and oddly enough, it redirects to TMX.com. Maybe they had a identity crisis there. Their stock is up today, so good for them. But also, their cover image is a space shuttle launching.
So it's not porn. It's not porn.
It's not. It's not. I think it's a marketing website of some kind. Okay. And I've already lost interest in whatever they have going on there. So why don't you tell us about our God of the Week?
Okay. So so you just talked about a rocket going into space, and I'm going to give us the Egyptian creator goddess of the sky. So that was a segue without even knowing it. It's almost like you planned it, but you didn't. So her name is Nut, but it's spelled nut, like N-U-T.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it is.
But it's pronounced Nut. And so.
And who is Nut the daughter of?
Oh, I'm already starting to laugh. She's the daughter of Tefnut. Tefnut.
It looks like Tefnut, though.
It looks like Tefnut, but I'm going with the Nut pronunciation of N-U-T.
I want it to be Tefnut.
I know. So that person, or God, or whatever, and Shu. And so Nut is
S-H-U, not S-H-U. Like on foot.
Yeah, so we're just doing, are these all homophones that we're doing?
Again, right, these are all, yeah, this is your story. I guess
my story.
The concept of shoe might not have existed back when. Anyway,
yeah, I digress. So Nut, our goddess, she is this gigantic, beautiful woman covered in stars because I guess she is the sky. It said creator goddess of the sky, but I think she is the sky. She sometimes swallows the stars, or so it says, okay, but she coughs them up later.
Well, is that not,
I don't know,
is that not kind of like a supernova type black hole thing, oh, or black holes colliding and then it's, you have science, gas, yeah, and things that
so
are given off
they
and
explain
you
have stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, so, I'm sure back when the Egyptians were doing their Egyptian stuff, I'm sure they were looking into deep space and saw these things happening and observed them.
Yeah. So, okay. So it's going to get a little bit weird here, I guess. Weirder. So she had a brother and it's spelled G-E-B. Do we say Jeb? Is that, are we going to call him Jeb? Yeah. Or Geb? Which one? Geb? Want to call him Geb? Okay.
Well, Arrested Development would go with
together.
Job. So yeah, instead of Gob.
Let's do Jeb. I'm going to do, yeah, Jeb. Okay. So Jeb, her brother, is the god of the earth. So that doesn't seem weird because, you know, it's all in the family, the world and the universe and stuff. But so he's her brother, but he's also her husband.
But is it by blood or are they like married?
I don't know. See, that's
are
the
they
thing.
Half brothers?
I don't know really. Their family tree in terms of who had intercourse with who in this god world.
See, I'm just, so I guess
so
I'm just
gonna,
an apologist
it,
for,
yeah, for deity incest. So that's a thing. So the family though, it's, they're all just so connected and up in each other's business. Shu is the mom. She's the air goddess. She's always like holding Nut in place because the sky, the air, I guess it's all connected. And then another, I guess he's a family member because I guess everybody's family in this world. Ra, the sun god. I'm just going to read kind of what it said when I was reading about this. He enters Nut's mouth every morning and essentially comes out her butt at night. I don't get it.
Well, let's digest, I guess. I mean,
and that
I can see the connection. You don't know where the sun goes at night. So
yeah, so he goes in
we
her.
We have to come up with some sort of explanation.
Yeah. So that was Egyptian science. I don't make this up. I just report the news. So we're going to leave that where it is because we don't need to explain it too much more. Moving on. Nut wanted kids. And she and Jeb, unfortunately, had trouble making that happen. I don't know the exact reasons, don't know whatever, but they were having a hard time. So then here comes Ra, and he's just a dick. And he says that even if Nut was to have kids, he's going to curse any offspring of hers. So the curse of his stated further that, like, she'd be able to get pregnant, but then never give birth. But I know. So in God worlds, though, it seems like there's always a loophole. And so another god, Thoth, T-H-O-T-H, that's a terribly hard to pronounce name. he comes along and he helps Nut find the loophole, whatever that was. And then she gives birth. So here's who she gives birth to, because this is important. This is important for us. Okay?
I know where it's going.
This was like, these are life-changing things for me. She gave birth to Isis, Osiris,
yes,
and Set. And so if you remember our God of the Week segment, I feel like we really started to hit our stride with Isis and the golden dick. So I just want to thank Nut for existing and giving birth, because otherwise where would we be right now? I wouldn't have gone the slippery slope from like golden dicks to Jesus jizz in just a matter of less than a year.
Well, we also featured Osiris in one of our episodes.
We did. The Egyptian pantheon of gods has been pretty good to us. So, yeah, I really don't even know what I just said, as always. But that's the story. And Andrew Torres is gonna make up for this in spades. So we are sorry. We'll be back with something better shortly. Okay, tonight we are thrilled to be joined by Andrew Torres. Andrew is one of the hosts of the absolutely wonderful Opening Arguments podcast, which I have no bias towards because I don't do any work for you guys, whatever. Before we start, I'll let the record show. It's fake news or something.
That's what you would expect a shill to say.
Exactly. And so, you know, so here we are with Andrew, the disciple of Michael Shermer, because some lady on Twitter said it. And I feel like we need to start by telling everybody, don't take legal advice from this podcast and don't take any advice from anything Dan or I ever say anyways. But, you know, we have to start there. So welcome, Andrew.
Natalie, Dan, thank you so much for having me on. I am really, really excited and looking forward to it.
All right. So we always do kind of everyone's origin story, pretty much. How did you get to the place where you're talking to us? But we're going to start with your, let's start with your lawyer story. How did you get into the law? And then we'll bring it to how you entered our skeptic and atheist world.
Okay. So I was kind of an accidental lawyer. Nobody in my family in my extended family is a lawyer. I didn't really know anything about like what lawyers do. I was just sort of a super nerdy kid, right? I started school early. I skipped a couple grades. I graduated early, right? Like, so, I went to college. I started college when I was 16. And so I stayed in the area, and then I was valedictorian in my class, and like going to Harvard Law School was just sort of a thing that like smart people did. And I kind of liked law and I kind of liked politics and, you know, that sort of thing. And I sort of had this vague idea that maybe I would be on the Supreme Court someday. Like, you know, that's the kind of thing you think about when you're, you know, a teenager. And so that's how I got to law school. And then if you go, and this is a very serious thing, and I have coached a lot of kids. I coached a high school debate for about a decade, and so I've worked with a lot of young kids. And as you can imagine, if you're active in debate, you tend to go to law school, and one of the things I will say is, if you don't know what you're doing with the law and you show up in one, you know, Harvard, Yale, Stanford, in an Ivy League law school, you will get pushed into sort of big firm law. And that's what happened to me. And again, it's because you're stuck in the same sort of mindset of like, right, I was an Apple polisher, A+ student. And like, so that it's okay. That mindset kind of continues, right? So you get the best clerkship that you can get. And I clerked for the Maryland State Supreme Court, right? Like, and then you go to the best law firm that you can go to. And so I went to Covington & Burling, which is one of the, you know, biggest, most, you know, oldest, most, you know, prestigious law firms in the world. And it really wasn't until I was about 28, 29 that I realized that this was my life and that there wasn't like anybody left to give me an A anymore. and so I kind of had one of those moments of like, what am I doing here at this like mega firm in DC? Like, that's not really me. And so I knew I wanted to relocate back. I grew up in Baltimore and I knew I wanted to like relocate back to Baltimore. And so I did. So I left. And so again, my thought process, the only thing I really knew was, well, I'm going to go from Covington & Burling, which is this huge mega firm, to the smallest firm that I could find, which was Zuckerman Spader, which has about 100 lawyers. and so then I went there. I stayed at Zuckerman for about 12 years, made partner. Everything was great. And then I kind of had that second sort of, you know, life crisis point where I realized that I really wanted to be doing this, you know, for myself rather than for somebody else. So I've had my own firm now. This is at the end of this year will be the end of year three of having my own firm, which is so much better than any other thing I have ever done in the law. I can't go on about how great it is. So that's how I got here.
Yeah. And I think that I'm guessing it's the same for Dan. We kind of started hearing the name Andrew on some of the podcasts that we listened to. some of our, you know, the Puzzle in a Thunderstorm crew. And so there's this Andrew the lawyer, right? I mean, Dan, is that kind of the same for you? That's how you, I mean, that's how I knew who he was.
Right, yeah.
And so how did you get into being the lawyer for some pretty hilarious and awesome podcasts?
Yeah, well, and that's part of what makes my day job interesting is, mm-hmm. you know, having Eli Bosnick as a client. but actually, I mean, the way I got into that was honestly by being a fan of atheist shows. And in particular, I started off as a fan, and I'm not just saying this because he's presently my partner and the best interviewer in the world, but being a fan of the original Thomas and the Bible show. And I had been listening to that for a long time. And from there, I got into to Thomas's other shows and was listening to the old incarnation of Serious Inquiries Only, which was then called Atheistically Speaking. And it was only through Thomas that I found, right, the Scathing Atheist podcast and Cognitive Dissonance and some of those folks. And interestingly, right, I mean, I found them at a time in my life where personally, like I'm a lot of, right, I've been an atheist for a long time. And so, you know, when I was in my 20s, I was a lot more scathing, right? Like yeah. Now I'm much more kind of a, right, I got a 15-year-old, like I'm pretty happy. Like I'm much more of a mellow atheist right now, you know, yeah. But I loved, I mean, the first time I heard Scathing, what I loved about it was, I mean, A, obviously, you know, the guys are hilarious. But B, and this was, you know, this was an early on one of Noah's diatribes. I've asked him about this. I think it's number 6, but I could be wrong on that. And Noah was going through the diatribe about some pastor had emailed him and said, hey, you want to, you know, have me on the show for a debate or whatever. And Noah's diatribe was basically like, no. I'm not going to have you on for a debate. There are lots of shows that have atheist and theist debates. If you want to go on one of those, go on one of those. But you know what else there are? There are like thousands and thousands of Christian-only podcasts where Christians go to hang out and talk to other Christians, and they don't have to like debate stuff that they know, right? Like they're just, that's their community and where they hang. Well, guess what? Like this is our community among atheists where like we don't want to have to like debate with people who believe in magic, okay? So find something else. And like, you know, and obviously he did it in his Noah way, which is funnier than I'm summarizing. But I really like that kind of spoke to me, right? Like I like that idea of the positive aspect of, you know, building community, right? Because I mean, one of the things people talk about all the time is the like, you know, people who have a positive experience in religious communities and, you know, like, what do you replace that with? And lots of times we don't do a good job of that. But I felt like the humor in those shows were things that helped kind of replace that community. So that's how I got to be fans of those shows. And then, I could tell you how I got in if you want to know. Like,
yeah, sure. Tell us.
So it was February or March of 2016. And I was listening to Atheistically Speaking. And Thomas had a great guest. I don't even remember who the guest was or what they were talking about. It was a typical, you know, good Atheistically Speaking, good Thomas interview until like the last 10 minutes. And then like the guest pontificated about some aspect of the First Amendment where he was just like disastrously wrong. And Thomas like kind of went on. And so I wrote an email to Thomas and I was like, hey, Thomas, I just want you to know, like, I love the show and I love this episode all the way up until here. And like the last 10 minutes where it totally went off the rails. And what any normal person would have done with that email would have written back like, go fuck yourself. I'm sorry. Can I swear on your show? Like,
oh, you could swear. Okay, cool. Yeah. Right. Talk to me on a regular basis. Yeah. You know.
But right. Like that's what you would have done. You would have been like, any sensible person would have been like, unsolicited email, right. Go down. But Thomas being, unbelievably nice and interested in engaging with people, like wrote back and said, thank you. And then like 2 weeks later, Scalia died. And so Thomas emailed me and said, hey, do you want to come on and, you know, talk some dirt about Scalia? And I was like, do I? And so I went on Atheistically Speaking, and I gave the kind of eulogy that Antonin Scalia deserves, which is to say that he is a monster whose judicial philosophy is at odds with the manifest tenor of the Constitution and should never have been confirmed to the Supreme Court. And like that went well. So I did a couple more.
It's extremely accurate, though, too. Like,
it's one of the things I've learned in 3 years being on my own and, you know, closing in on 2 years of doing the like podcasting stuff. Right. Most lawyers are really, really circumspect. And I feel like compared to the rest of the community, right, like I'm always the one saying, you know, don't take legal advice from a podcast and, you know, all of the like disclaimers. And still, I feel like I'm way on the conservative fringe. And then like I'm going to my old firm's holiday party next week. Right. Then I go and I like interact in a room with other lawyers. And I realized that like compared to the rest of the legal community, like I'm their fringe, right? Like, so, you know, so I think it worked well in the sense that, you know, we obviously Thomas and I, got along well, we, you know, the content, and Thomas is a fantastic interviewer and everything else. And I think like the fact that I was not, you know, willing to say like, no, Scalia's a monster, right? Like, let's be honest about that. So then I came back on, we did like three or four more episodes, and then started talking about how to, you know, turn, instead of it being guest appearances, how to turn it into a show. And that's, we kicked around a bunch of ideas. We wanted to call it Legally Speaking at first. But there's like a garbage law firm in Canada that's put out like three episodes of a podcast in 2011, but they own all the social media on Legally Speaking. So it was like, so we scratched that out. And then I suggested Lawful Neutral. So, right, at least Natalie giggled on that. I said that to Thomas and he was like,
that's so nerdy. That's
yeah,
so
no, it totally was. And Thomas was like, I don't get it. And I'm like, really? You never played Dungeons and Dragons as a child? And he was like, no, I had friends. And I was like, oh, okay, well, see, that's the difference between the two of us. So we scratched that one off. And so eventually then we came up with opening arguments, which I will say, if any lawyers are listening, like the number one question I always get from lawyers is, why is it opening arguments when it's, you know, if you call lawyers, like they're actually opening statements because you can't give arguments in your opening statement. And I was like, right. That way, when you type opening arguments into Google, you get my show instead of 85,000 videos on how to give an opening statement. So
that's some social media savvy there.
Oh,
that's
yeah, some, right. Like, yeah.
That's how you do it. But I mean, and people really love your show. And, you know, and you talked about community before. And I mean, you guys just have really good fans, too.
Oh, God. Yeah. I mean, you know, you are active. You help moderate the Opening Arguments community Facebook page. I got the idea from that because we do these hangouts with our patrons. And I was sitting, it was a couple months ago, and we did one of the hangouts, and it had a little scroll bar on the side where people were, you know, talking. And I realized that like people were talking to each other in the hangout far more than they were like asking us questions. And I thought that was just awesome. And I was like, okay, well, like, let's stick all these people in one place and, you know, let them have fun together. And so far, like, you know, we're doing pretty well.
Yeah, no, you got like the opening arguments, just vibe and community is probably one of the nicest Facebook communities that I've seen personally. So
I've only been in it for about 2 months, and I think I forget what the topic was, but it was something that was needed nuance to it. And I said something and somebody disagreed, and I think the group that we kind of started and have kind of let go. Just go. I don't know. That's the topic of another show. I expected to come back and it'd be like a shitstorm, but people were like actually talking like real people. And I was like, I sent Natalie a message. I was like, holy shit, I said this thing that I knew would probably get something, some sort of reaction. Like, it was like, whatever I said wasn't mean or anything like that. But I mean, I guess I tend, people for whatever reason think that I'm some sort of like conservative, like in disguise, which is adorable to think. Again, topic of another show. But, and so I said something like that, and it's just, I was just so surprised and slightly disappointed that I was like, well, now I got my fighting shoes on and
nobody's doing that.
What do we do now?
No, I met people know that I had an extended and not polite run-in with another atheist podcaster before starting the show. At the same time that happened, on that same thread, it was over there was a Christian Mingle settlement.
Christian Mingle.
Right? And same issue as the Masterpiece Cake Shop, right? Like, can religious bigots discriminate against people? And the answer is clearly no. But in that same massive sprawling Facebook thread, there was a guy named Eric Brewer, and I have said this, and I've actually like apologized to Eric for this, but I was twice as aggressive easily, right, to Eric than I was to the atheist podcaster, and part of it was because he came later, right? So I was already like super cranky and whatever. Eric is a patron of the show now, right? Like, in other words, it's just the difference of personality. Like, you know, when I came back, and even though I came like super strong at him and I was, you know, overly cranky, Eric was like, oh wait, like, I'm talking to a lawyer who might actually know something about this. Like, here's my conception. Am I wrong about that? And I was like, well, yeah, actually you are, and here's why. And he was like, oh, that's cool, that totally makes sense. I give him all the credit in the world, because, you know, again, he would have had every right to just be like, yeah, this guy is, you know, full of himself and a jerk, because I was a little bit of a jerk to him. That model to me, like, that's what I want to do with the show, right? Like, the idea of, let's sit down, let's have a conversation, and here's what I'm bringing to the table. And in a lot of situations, like, I don't want to be full of myself, but like, I'm bringing an expertise that people don't have. But it's part of why, like, I paid our editor to come up with Andrew Was Wrong music, right? Like, there's no segment I enjoy more than doing an Andrew Was Wrong in the beginning. Like, it was, you know, I always want to be held accountable for, you know, what I say on the show. Like, that's what it means to be a skeptic. And like, I, again, as evidenced by the segment, like, I screw stuff up all the time because we talk about, you know, all sorts of things. And sometimes I script a lot too. That's the most embarrassing when I do that. But you know, like, that's, to me, that's the example that, you know, I want to set going forward. That's what I want the show to be about. I don't want anybody to ever believe something because I've said it. I want people to, you know, have the tools necessary to go out and process things for themselves. So,
no, and yeah,
that's making it more of a revealed truth than actually teaching somebody how to think or teaching them how to process the information for themselves.
Yeah. No, it and if you see, I mean, we get every couple of days somebody will come on Twitter and will say something like, you know, sometimes it's law students who are like, you know, I just passed my, you know, torts exam, and I think it's because I listened to opening arguments. Or, you know, the other day somebody was like, I read the document that was referenced in, you know, a Chicago Tribune article about something. Like, I clicked through and I actually read the case, and it didn't scare me, and I was able to understand it because of the show. Like, those are the best compliments in the world. Like, that's why we do the show. Nothing feels better than being like, look, I get the law is scary, but like, you know, here's how you can sort of reclaim some of being able to understand it for yourself.
Well, and it's awesome that you are sort of this person for your community of listeners, and then also for, you know, people like us who, before we got on tonight, Dan sends me a link of something that happened. Like, you know, because like we were saying before, it is totally normal for it to be Monday night at almost 8 o'clock and big shit's happening. Because this is, it's totally normal, right, Andrew? Our world is normal, right?
This is as not normal as it could possibly be, right? Like, and so, you know, we're, at least Natalie, I mean, you know, Dan is identified as a conservative, so, you know, whatever. But look, I'm a left of center guy. I was not a fan of the George W. Bush administration. There were things that he did that were asymmetrically shady, right? Like appointing scores of, you know, Liberty University grads to the Department of Justice in underling positions so that then they could be promoted through the ranks when they were manifestly non-qualified. Regent University, I think, too. You know, like, so look, there were horrible, terrible things that George W. Bush did. Outsourcing our prisons to a private torture facility in Cuba, right? Like, these are not normal things, but those are not normal things within the realm of contemptible politics, right? Like, what we have right now is we have somebody who is 71 years old, who is the president, who, as far as I can tell, has never done anything charitable or civic-minded or anything in his entire life, right? Like, say what you will about Mike Pence, and I'll say a lot about Mike Pence, but Mike Pence...
I live in Indiana, I can say a lot about my former boss.
Mike Pence, I liken to George Wallace, right? Like, he's a monster. His beliefs are odious and horrible, but nevertheless, like, he has a conception of public service, right? Like, he has causes that are higher than himself. They're wrong, right? But he is at least somebody that our founding fathers anticipated being involved in government, right? Like, again, misguided and strange and wrong, but nevertheless, like, civic minded. Our founding fathers, is just very, very clear. You go back to the documents, our founding fathers never contemplated, and there are some embarrassingly naive passages in the Hamilton Federalist Papers on the presidency, in which he's like, well, and obviously, you know, no man of, you know, callow abilities could be elected president because of the Electoral College or whatever. And it just makes you cringe and cry. But like, Donald Trump, as far as I can tell, the only things he cares about are enriching himself, his immediate family, and his inner circle of cronies. He cares about no other thing beyond that. And that's terrifying. And that's why, you know, I've moved into the position. It's something I always say to fellow atheists, right? Like, when you're rooting for impeachment, when you're rooting to ascend Yodel Mountain, that is going to make Mike Pence president. And it is probably going to make it more likely that horrendous legislation gets passed, right? Now, again, it's hard to imagine something worse than the current tax bill or whatever, but like, get imagining, right? And in my view, that's the price for restoring the nation to at least having some semblance of an adult in charge. So I'm sorry, that was a ranting tirade.
But that sets it up very well, because, you know, it's Monday night and we're gonna and travel ban.
Yeah.
So, just a normal Monday in America.
Yeah.
Everybody.
Yeah. See, And with that, like, this is the third iteration of it, but I feel like to speak to what you were referring to with Pence just being more equipped to actually get shit done, I feel like if Pence were, I mean, he would probably have done this as president, but he would get his first version done, as opposed to Trump just being so stupid about how he constructs it and how he even like pitches it and like calling it a Muslim ban or whatever like that. I forget how exactly he worded it with the first iteration, but like, at least like Pence knows how to politic. He just doesn't
know
a lot of things.
That is exactly right. One of the very earliest episodes that we did of Opening Arguments was, you know, and again, it was set up like, it's kind of hard to go back and listen to it, right? It was set up as, okay, in the exceptionally unlikely incident, you know, outcome where Donald Trump is president, could he really ban all the Muslims from coming in? And the answer I gave in that first episode was probably yes. And the reason is there's a statute. It's 8 U.S.C. 1182F. And that statute says suspension or of entry or imposition of restrictions by president. And it says, wherever the president finds that the entry of any aliens or class of aliens into the United States would be detrimental to the interests of the United States, he may, by proclamation, that means executive order, and for such period as he deemed necessary, suspend the entry of all aliens or any class of aliens or non-immigrants, or impose on the entry of aliens any restrictions he may deem to be appropriate. Okay, that's pretty broad language. And when you look at the times, it's only been used a couple of times in our nation's history, but it's been upheld, right? So so there's the authority. Had a competent president drafted the first executive order, I think it would have been very, very difficult to challenge that. But what happened was we had Trump, and by the way, like, because Trump is Trump, what that means is that standard Republican operatives have been very, very slow in moving over to him, right? So the people who are working for him are either incompetent or lesser. I shouldn't say incompetent, but they're lesser levels of competent, or they are people like Paul Manafort who are so, whom everyone knows is toxic and corrupt and no one else would touch, right? So that's who you have as your staffers and who you have writing this thing. And so the first, the real problem with the first executive order, and I say problem from a legal analytical standpoint, right? Like the problem is that we have a monstrous racist as president. But like the legal specific problem with the order was that it really made no differentiation in terms of banning the imposition of entries of classes of aliens between people who had a pre-existing right to come to this country and people who didn't, right? And so now, all of a sudden, even though you had a statutory authorization for it, you had, right, vacationing Americans, vacationing individuals who were out of the country on work visas, right? Who had a work visa to be in the United States, but were out visiting family and were trying to come home. Well, those people have due process rights that are guaranteed by the Fifth Amendment to the Constitution. And there was no reason to include them in the first EO. And any competent lawyer would have said, okay, you've got to carve out. You're not even trying. You're trying to stop immigration, right? Like you've got to carve it out, but they didn't. And that's why, to oversimplify, that's why the first EO was blocked. And so then the second EO was promulgated. But by the time the second EO was promulgated, again, because our president is a goddamn moron, you had the Ninth Circuit in particular, by the time it was appealed, that an injunction was granted by a district court in Hawaii and then appealed up to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit. And the Ninth Circuit established, put together a record based on the president's public statements, right? Saying things like, well, you know, this new travel ban is really the same thing. It's all just the Muslim ban and it's all extreme vetting. Extreme vetting is the Muslim ban. And so every time, you know, that the administration was trying to walk a nuanced line, Trump would take to Twitter or, you know, go out in public. And it really created a level of argumentation that, quite frankly, wouldn't have been there if not sort of for the missteps of the administration. And that, you know, that kind of put a crack in the door. There's a case that's the city of Hialeah case that kind of sets out the test of when you can overturn legislation for having a discriminatory purpose. And what happened in that particular case, the city of Hialeah, Florida, passed a law that banned certain kinds of public slaughter of chickens, right? And again, because this is a town council, and like truly most town council members are idiots, right? Like, I mean, you know, that requires no talent whatsoever. So the town wanted to ban Santeria, right? And so in order to ban Santeria, they wanted to ban the practice of chicken slaughter. Well, there's a perfectly easy way to ban chicken slaughtering while pretending that you're not discriminating against practitioners of Santa Maria. And that is, you say, you know, whereas we find that the public slaughter of chickens and their bloodletting creates a public health hazard, and whereas, you know, that has been on the rise in the city of Hialeah, therefore, you know, be it resolved by the city of Hialeah that within the confines of the city, it shall be a misdemeanor class 5 to slaughter a chicken in outdoors, right? Like, you do it totally neutrally. It clamps down on the practice of the religion, and there's nothing you can do about it. Instead, what the city of Hialeah did was elicited testimony from ministers and members in the community who were like, we have a creeping Santeria problem here, and we got to keep these Santeria people out. God. And literally, it was right on the record of, I know this bill seems like it's about chickens, but it's really about keeping out Santeria, right? And that's the level that something has to rise to before the Supreme Court is like, okay, so like that, you can't do that thing, right? And then Trump really is pretty close to city of Hialeah. So yeah, so that's a super long-winded way of saying I am not surprised by the Supreme Court's orders that have come down today. I can tell you a little bit about, you know, what they are and what they do, but I have been saying, you know, from the beginning, the door cracked open because of Trump's incompetence. But I've been saying from the beginning, you know, look, that there shouldn't be this 8 USC 1182F, but there is. It's a statute. It's been on the books for a long time. And non-resident aliens, those who do not have a pre-existing right to be in this country, don't have constitutional rights either, right? So, yeah. So the president can, by and large, can do this. I'm not surprised at the outcome. I should say, you know, this is not a merits decision, but when there is a merits decision, the merits will be upheld as well.
And so can you like just summarize and speak to like where we are like right now as best as possible? I mean, I know this is just super recent and everything.
Sure.
And breaking news.
Yeah, so it's a little bit confusing procedurally. No court has ruled on the merits of whether the third travel ban, that's EO 13867, violates the Constitution. Okay. There hasn't been a decision on that. What there has been is there were two cases, one in Hawaii and one here in Maryland. And in fact, the judge in Maryland is a colleague of mine, not a friend, but a colleague of mine, somebody I know, Ted Chang. And both of those courts issued a preliminary injunction that blocked the executive order from going into effect. And what that means is typically when you sue somebody over something, the rest of the world continues to operate while you sue them, right? So for example, if Natalie, you and I have a contract and you, I say, and I'm supposed to pay you, you know, a certain amount of money, and I say you've breached that contract, so I stop paying you, right? Then you can go to court, and if I'm wrong, if I'm just making it up, you can go to court and sue me for the balance of the contract. But what doesn't happen is the status quo doesn't continue, right? Like I get to stop paying you, and then we go to court and figure it out, right? Yeah. The reason we can do that in the contract case is because it's about money and courts will figure out money at the end of the day. But in a situation where it's important for the status quo to continue, you can get a temporary restraining order and then preliminary injunction. And what that does is it prevents the thing that you want to have happen from actually happening. And what you have to do in order to do that is there's a four-part test. But the two things that you really have to show is, number one, you have to show irreparable harm. Right. So and what irreparable harm means in legal parlance is something that can't be fixed by money. Right. So when I breach the contract with you, Natalie, you don't have irreparable harm because if we put enough money, if we throw enough money at you, it's fine. Right.
Yeah.
But if you're violating people's constitutional rights to be in this country, there's not an amount of money that will make that fine. Right. So you have irreparable harm. But then what you have to show, and this is something that we talk about on the show all the time, and like I'd like to do a seminar for journalists because journalists don't seem to get this. But you have to show to the court the provision is called likelihood of success on the merits. And let me explain what that means. What that means is you have to show the court that you are likely to win on the merits of the underlying argument. And not just, you know, 51-49, but that it's like 70-30, that it's pretty clear in your favor, right? So in other words, in order to get the injunction, you have to show, look, there's a real need for the court to step in. And you know what? I'm going to win on this eventually anyway, and we should just sort of short circuit to the end. Okay. So think about what that means just from an analytical standpoint. What it means is that when you win on getting a temporary restraining order and preliminary injunction, that you're probably going to win on the underlying merit, right? Because the court said you've got a judge who you're going to argue the merits in front of who said, I think you're likely to win on the merits. And generally, when judges say, I think you're likely to win on the merits, they don't turn around and go, you know, I don't know what I was thinking 6 months ago. Now, you are, right? But if you lose on a preliminary injunction, that doesn't mean you're necessarily going to lose on the merits. It might just mean that you weren't sufficiently, right? That the judge says, boy, I think this is kind of a tough call. It's kind of 50-50 right now, right? So so I was surprised when two courts issued TROs and enjoined the travel ban from going into effect, because I thought the best you were going to get was 50-50, right? That you put the city of Hialeah arguments and you put some of the fact-finding arguments and whatever, and you stack it up against 8 USC 1182F, the best you were going to get was 50-50. But two really smart judges put together pretty solid opinions. Those got appealed to the Ninth Circuit for the Hawaii decision and the Fourth Circuit, respectively. And were upheld in both of those circuits, and then appealed to by the Trump administration to the Supreme Court. And when the Trump administration appealed, they appealed for an order enjoining those court opinions from going into effect. So in other words, it shifted the burden away from the parties challenging the travel ban and to the Trump administration, right? So now they have to meet that test, right? Irreparable harm and proving likelihood of success on the merits. And the Supreme Court a year ago enjoined the second executive order on the basis that that it met those criteria. So the Supreme Court was very, very clear in signaling where they were going to come out. Then EO number two was time limited and expired. So the Trump administration promulgated EO three. EO three added in the country of Chad and added in North Korea and was, you know, sort of a really transparent fig leaf to try and say that it's not a Muslim ban. And that's what these two orders are. And again, same thing happened, enjoined, upheld by the Fourth and Ninth Circuits. And these orders are, so first they're per curiam. And by that I mean nobody authors these particular orders, but they are 7-2. The dissenters are Ginsburg and Sotomayor, but that's it. And what they do is they say that the stay application to stay the effect of the Fourth and Ninth Circuit cases is granted pending the Fourth and Ninth Circuit reaching a decision on the merits of those cases. Now, I think what's going to happen is the Fourth and Ninth Circuits are going to rule that the travel ban is unconstitutional on the merits. It will then be appealed to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court, it will be consolidated, and the Supreme Court is going to affirm, and the Supreme Court will grant another stay by the government when that happens on the merits, so those are the stories you're going to see. The next story you're going to see is Fourth Circuit strikes down travel ban, right, in 4 months, 5 months, 6 months. That's not going to change the ultimate trajectory on this. And it will be in effect. It will have been in effect. And it will stay in effect. There may be 2 or 3 days where, it goes out. But that's what's going to happen.
Like, and to me, just having this sort of discussion about this thing happening just feels kind of unbelievable. Mm-hmm. That this is where we are.
Yeah, well,
and so go yeah, ahead. No, really. And it's like, where do we go from, like, with like this as part of our culture and the climate?
Well, I mean, we're white, so we go anywhere. Oh. Because have you ever tried being white? It's
Dan. But really,
that's not a shot. That's not well. No, that's at the expense of Trump and Trump supporters, is it not?
Let's go with yes. I'm going with yes on that one.
We'll go with yes. But it's such a fucked up situation, though. The whole thing.
Remember, in early 2016, when Trump announced this during the Republican primaries, he was condemned by every Republican politician, by every person on the stage, except I think Ben Carson, and by Paul Ryan, by Mitch McConnell, by the Republican establishment. And the people who have moved are the Republican establishment, right? And the reason they moved is what we saw today what we saw a couple days ago with the Senate passage of the tax bill, right? Like, that's what they wanted to do. They didn't care that in order to do that, it required putting a criminal narcissist game show host in office. But like, that's where we are, right? Like, it was a year and a half ago when everybody agreed that this was monstrous. I don't know how to get that back other than for there to be, you know, electoral consequences for people who do this.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like, this wasn't actually what we were thinking, we'd talk about, but then this is just what happened on tonight, right before the show. But that's kind of like the climate right now. I mean, you and Thomas do not have a lack of things to discuss on OA because it's constant, though, right? I mean, even like Dan and I, for our show, we have interviews that we recorded in the summer that we haven't put out yet.
Oh, wow.
Because there's always something topical.
We've been wanting to put out, who is it? The Cosmic Skeptic. We talked to him years ago. we can't because and Natalie was just chatting me as we're talking here. There's so much happening, and I think part of it is I feel so powerless to try to do anything. It's like, well, what can I do to do this besides like talk about it and try to raise some level of awareness on it and get these ideas in other people as quickly as we can, like that. So yeah, we just keep putting things off,
putting things off. As Natalie knows, we keep an electronic whiteboard. I have 15 things on that list that we wrote in October of 2016, and it just gets pushed down every week because there's too many stories to cover. As to what you can do, and I beat this drum every single show I go on, every single time I'm talking to like-minded folks, what you can do is vote Democratic, even if you don't like the Democratic candidate, right? It's a binary system, and the only thing that will move Republicans is if they suffer electoral consequences. And, you know, it particularly when we're speaking to liberal, right? Like, I don't know how you talk to Trump supporters, right? I've tried. It's going to be real hard to move them. But I know people that we can move that are sufficient to give us back a majority. And you got to tell those people, like, I don't care if you identify as a communist and an ex Goldman Sachs banker just won the Democratic primary. Like, you got to pull the lever for that guy with the D next to his name, no matter how odious he is, because that's the only consequence there is in our political system is losing office. If you're not doing that 100% of the time, then what you are doing is legitimating in some way what Trump is doing. And you have to measure every single thing against that. So I think as part of my outreach, every time I talk to somebody who says, I identify as a Democrat, I'm like, yeah, but let's talk about what that means, right? go ahead, go nuts, right? Like an example I always use is, right, you know, in Iowa's second district, there's going to be like Star Moonbeam running for office, and she's going to be, you know, a lesbian Wiccan, you know, like she's going to be perfect in every single way. And she's, and like the groundswell behind her among, you know, in our community is going to be amazing. And like, and then she's going to lose 52-48, you know, to an establishment Democrat ex-Goldman Sachs banker. And like, you better get out there and vote for Mr. Goldman Sachs, right? Like, I don't care how hurt you are. And like, it won't matter how badly he cheats Star Moonbeam out of, like, get out there and vote for him. And if you say, well, it's Star or nothing, then congratulations. Like, you know, you're helping Donald Trump.
So you voted for Jill Stein last election.
Yeah, yeah. I am. I have. I don't know. I know you're saying that as a joke. I have for over a year now referred to Jill Stein publicly as a fraud, a con artist, a cheat, and have dared her to sue me. I repeat that at every opportunity. Repeat that again now. She is not just a spoiler. I mean, she is an idiot and somebody who wished Harambe a happy birthday. All true, by the way. But she's a con artist. And Natalie's going to find out more about that at my talk to the DC area skeptics this Sunday, December 9th, 1:30 p.m. in Bethesda.
Oh yeah. Yeah. See, and that's perfect because we are going to release this episode this week because as we were talking before, I like sent Dan a message like we're releasing this one this week because it's
I would
topical
like to go back and talk more about Harambe here. We
that's Dan's favorite meme of all time. But really though, because if the thing with the climate right now in our country is that if we wait to release this episode till next week, Trump's already going to do something else crazy, probably.
Oh yeah,
or he's going to tweet something and whatever. If we're all still here next week, like it, that's just kind of the feeling sometimes of it all. You're right though about the voting and about the like getting out there and just.
But that's
speaking.
I think that's what a lot of Republicans thought was that this is the person that can get us what we want. He's an idiot. We don't like him. But he's the one that we have there. So vote for him. And I don't know what the answer to that is. But that, I mean, I see that same argument with them. And now so many of them, Paul Ryan, are too spineless to actually stand up and say that. You can almost tell you when you look at some of them that's they know how fucked up this is, but they just don't care. And I can't wrap my mind around that. Just going along with something just so awful and evil.
I'm with you. I mean, and again, you know, to shift the blame back where it belongs, like, I don't blame Republicans for voting Republican, right? Like, they're Republicans. Of course they're going to do that, right? I blame, if you look at the back catalog, I started opening arguments. Episodes 1-4 are on the Bush v. Gore 2000 decision. And I can't tell you at the time that we recorded those in July of 2016, I did not think it was very, it was right after the whole, the first round of Comey leaks came out. I did not think that Donald Trump could be president. I never seriously entertained that for a second. But nevertheless, I saw as part of the political dynamic something that was awfully close to what happened in 2000. And to kind of super summarize that down, a bunch of goddamn liberal idiots didn't think that Al Gore, who was the most legitimately progressive candidate that the Democrats have run in half a century, was liberal enough for them. And so they decided to cast protest votes for Ralph Nader that handed the election to George W. Bush, who was pre-Donald Trump, the worst president in our nation's history. Right. And they did it in horrifyingly similar ways to things that repeated themselves in the 2016 election. An example I always give is the state of West Virginia. Right. And you two are both younger than me. You look at West Virginia and it is a deep red state full of mountain people. Right. In the 2000 election, heading into it, West Virginia was one of 10 states that voted for Michael Dukakis in 1988. Michael Dukakis lost Illinois, Maryland, and California, but he won West Virginia. West Virginia was a deep blue stronghold. Nobody in West Virginia in the Democratic Party thought that they were in a battleground state. And scores of goddamn idiots in West Virginia said, well, I'm going to have a protest vote for Ralph Nader because, you know, it's clear Al Gore's going to win West Virginia anyway. West Virginia's 5 electoral votes. If those people had voted for Al Gore instead of Ralph Nader, then Al Gore would have had enough electoral votes to be president without Florida. We wouldn't have had to heard about the hanging chads. We wouldn't have had the Bush v. Gore. We wouldn't have had any of it. He would have had 273 electoral votes. The election would have been over. Nobody thought West Virginia was a battleground state until it was. Al Gore lost Tennessee, his home state. Very few presidential candidates have ever lost their home state. Nobody thought he was going to lose Tennessee until he did, right? Al Gore lost New Hampshire. Again, he had 268. New Hampshire has 3 electoral votes. That would have been enough. It would have been 271 to 269, but it would have been enough. Al Gore and Bill Clinton had won New Hampshire twice. Nobody thought Al Gore was going to lose New Hampshire. You take any of those states and you take the liberals in those states who just said, well, we have the luxury to wait it out because we're not in one of the purple swing states. And now, flash forward to 2016. Democrats in Wisconsin, Democrats in, and Hillary Clinton narrowly won Minnesota by like 5,000 votes. She almost lost Minnesota. But Democrats in Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Michigan in particular said, look, I'm looking at Nate Silver. He shows Hillary Clinton winning by 10. Doesn't hurt for me to vote for Jill Stein or whatever. And you don't realize you're in a battleground state until all of a sudden that's a red state. And it's something I say over and over again. You know, look, is California going to be a swing state in 2020? Probably not, right? But if you don't live in California, like, you have an obligation to not look at Nate Silver's map and go, it's kind of safe, so I'm going to send it. You've got an obligation to get out there and, you know, make sure that you vote.
So or you could just vote for the right person and then just tell everybody that you didn't. Like, that's fine. I'm cool with that. Like, nobody will know.
Yeah.
That is a little right, secret.
I was just going to say,
learning from mistakes, like using this election of 2016 as, let's not do that again. Let's actually vote where it is going to count and vote and not just sit at home as, you know.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing is you can look at the amount of total votes over the last, what I think, 3 elections, and each election the Democrat, like, the amounts for the Republican candidates about the same, but each time for the Democratic candidate went down significantly.
Yeah, and but again, right? I mean, Natalie, you're talking about learning from 2016, and I sure hope we do, but like, these are the exact same lessons that were presented in 2000. Right.
I know. And that's the thing that's scary.
It's terrifying.
Is that wasn't enough to make people, you know, just do what they needed to do to get shit done. But I guess, you know, what Dan was talking about, continuing to have conversations and talk about this stuff. I think that there's a lot of value to that. Like, I think what you and Thomas do with your show has so much value in just the content you're putting out there. I think everybody else, you know, like us who has a podcast, to continue to talk about these things, even though I don't think we went into this like we're going to be political or we're going to, you know, because who knows? But with the world the way it is, everybody needs to put these messages out there because we need to saturate these messages out there because obviously people need
to. And not only that, but just learn how to talk to each other about it without devolving into, you know, some angry thread where you're calling everybody every name you can possibly think of just because you have ideological differences. And I'm not talking about people who say, you know, horrible, awful, racist things, just in general. Like, if somebody has a disagreement with you over their political ideology, that doesn't mean they're a terrible person necessarily. There's probably still a lot of things that that they say and do and think that are good. It's just this one area that they, you know, may not align with you on.
You know, I mean, and let me throw this as a question out to you, because I ask this of everybody that that I talk to who's smart and politically active, because I don't know the answer to it. And it's this. I don't know how to have productive discussions with folks in an era where people on the other side get their news from Fox News and Breitbart and Alex Jones. And literally we're not inhabiting a world of the same facts. And, you know, and I will say, like, well, there's X, and they'll be like, oh yeah, well, you got that from, you know, the mainstream media, so I don't believe that. And I'm like, okay. So, you know, so the best I can come up with is kind of, you know, what, let's talk about how to evaluate sources. But like, but now, you know, now I'm on a one-on-one, right? And I don't know how to reach people that are being indoctrinated with, you know, what is really the equivalent of like Pravda circa 1965, right? Like, we have a state-run organ in Fox News that actively coordinates with the Republican Party and does not care whether their stories are true or false, that accuses the actual media that report true stories of being fake news. You guys clearly have thoughts on that. I don't know how to have those conversations, how to bridge that gap, how to get beyond it.
See, and I guess for me, and this, I don't know that this is any great answer, but I think you can do the best you can to try to present your arguments or cases for where you get your news and what good sources are and all of that. But if I'm kind of thinking of this in the way I think of, say, the people I interact with on Twitter, or like anti-vax people, or people who are so far on one,
yeah, yeah. No,
say
good, good
on
comparison.
One side of things. Okay. So I know that there are people who are, and I say, unfortunately, kind of unreachable. Mm-hmm. Like, they are not, like, the people who are the true believers in whatever Alex Jones is saying, or whatever Andrew Wakefield, or whatever, pick your conspiracy theorist, whatever they're saying, there are people who I think, unfortunately, are kind of unreachable. So I think that the conversations need to be more with the middle of the road, on the fence people. And I like you, Andrew, I don't know how to sway or convince somebody who's so...
Well, you can't.
Like, just deeply held beliefs. You can't. I unfortunately maybe think the answer is you can't with some people. But then it's shifting the focus and attention to who can you reach and putting the effort there.
Well, and, I don't know. And that's why I talk about motivating liberals all the time, right? Because I've reached the same conclusion, but I tell you what worries me. What worries me in the long term is, right, I don't know how many people are truly anti-vax, right? 5% of the population, 10, right? And I'm not trying to downplay it. Like, that's scary.
No, yeah.
Trump's approval rating is 37%, right? More than one in three people are down the rabbit hole on Donald Trump. And I worry about, look, politically, strategically, I can say, yeah, let's build a coalition that's 55%. But like, writing off 40% of the country is that's how you get, you know, the Bastille, right? I mean, like, you, that's not a recipe for a healthy mm-hmm. society in the long run. And I
agree. And I think that's what so many causes people to have such extreme views is because they feel, and I'm not saying they're right, I'm not taking their side, I'm not being defensive, I'm just trying to look at what has built that up and what's like kind of results in where we're at now, is when you like you it's almost a self-fulfilling prophecy, because you have people who have such terrible views, espouse those views, they are shamed, and now they go into hiding, they go underground, they stop posting about it publicly and things like that, but then they are able to connect with these groups and they say, yeah, everybody's against us, and then so that just emboldens them and makes them feel, and of course I know Trump has done nothing but help those people feel more powerful and like they can be more vocal and with her thoughts like that, with these terrible thoughts. But I think it's there. I don't know what the answer is what I'm trying to say, but there's just so much involved there where you want to have these conversations. You want to show these people why they're wrong, or maybe why, you know, they're what they think is not exactly reality or remotely close to reality. But even then you run the risk of just completely, like you said, alienating 40% of the country that just sequesters them now, and they're not going to change. They're going to go further and further down the Breitbart, whatever, Fox News rabbit hole, and not going to come out of it. And if you can figure out how to stop that, how to fix that, you win politics, and you should run for president.
No, but as this, you know, because unfortunately it's like, this is the end of our time together, but I want to think about this, because, and I'd like to pose this to anybody who's listening, kind of same question that Andrew asked, is like, how do you reach people? And I'm thinking, like, would this might be a nice discussion to do kind of roundtable style for a future episode about the idea of kind of changing hearts and minds, you know, because there are a lot of people out there who do need to be reached on various issues. And it's, and the idea of communication and effective communication and helping change minds. I mean, that's a big conversation, and one that I think applies to so much of what all of us are trying to do. And I really, like, I pose that to anyone who's listening, is like, what do you do? What advice do you have to help reach people? Right. 'Cause that's valuable for any of us. You know where to find us, to tell us these things.
I just want to end, you know, that politically it hasn't always been like this, you know, and yes, right, like we're at what seems like the absolute rock bottom right now, but the trajectory has been bad for a while, and when I look back, I mean, again, I'm an old guy, so, you know, I cut kind of my formative years as a politically active kid in the Reagan administration. But I look back at thing, I know. But you know, and back then, right, it was about, right, I was in school in DC when Bill Clinton was elected, and we went out on election night to the White House, and people were throwing empty suitcases over the fence at the White House, you know, encouraging George H.W. Bush to, you know, move out. I mean, it was that idea of finally, you know, getting the Republicans out of Iowa. It was a great moment. We're passing around bottles of champagne in the street, and it was so, yes, right, like I was a political partisan back then. But, you know, there are moments, right? I remember being a kid. I remember my dad taking me aside. I was only like 8 or 9 years old. And there was a vote in the Senate to make Martin Luther King Day a national holiday. And racist North Carolina Senator Jesse Helms was leading the filibuster to prevent that from happening. And he was one of the pre-Trump old school racists. So he couldn't say, you know, we don't want to have a holiday for Martin Luther King. Instead, it was like, well, you know, Martin Luther King had ties to the Communist Party, and what's the money, what's the cost going to be in making this a federal holiday? And it was, you know, and it was all dog whistle stuff. And the person, again, I remember this was, you know, 30 years ago, the person who led the floor fight in the Senate to break the filibuster by Jesse Helms was Republican Senator Bob Dole, right? It was not a given that because one of our cranky racist asshole members is behind this, we're all behind it, right? There was no sense of that kind of what I've called the shirts and skins model before. Like, and Bob Dole rose to the floor, and look, they're senators, so he didn't call Jesse Helms a bigoted racist, but like he said, it is bigotry that is driving this, and it is our best impulses that will put us together. And I'm looking.
So what I got out of that is that we need more Bob Doles in the world.
Unachievable.
So maybe there's hope, right? We've been there before. There's hope, right?
And I sure hope so. Yeah.
We need to vote for the right people to be in there making positive change. And so, yeah. Andrew, I think really like you did like hit on a lot of important messages where people just need to like they can take away, you know, going and voting Democrat and helping turn the tides a little bit. That would be awesome. And I'm sure that everyone who has listened would like to listen to more of you. So where can people find you on the internet?
My show is Opening Arguments, and you can find that at openargs.com, openargs. And it's openargs pretty much everywhere, right? The Twitter account, Facebook, everything. So look for it. We should be number one on your Google search if you type in Opening Arguments. Definitely if you type in podcast. So thanks for the opportunity to plug the show. Thank you so much.
We'll have you
come back because there is never a shortage of these kind of things to talk about between you and Andrew Seidel. We could always have a lawyer Andrew all the time. So, maybe we'll get both of you sometime.
I don't know if you've heard, I've had Andrew Seidel on my show twice. Both times, like he and I have recorded for like 2.5 hours and we've done the like look over, like, like middle school dating, like you hang up, like we could talk for, I'm not kidding, 24 hours straight.
We can have an Andrew-a-thon sometime on the podcast.
We'll do it for charity.
You so much for coming and talking to us.
Yeah, thank you,
Dan, Natalie. thank you so much for having me.
This week, the reason we love the internet is a combination of Thomas the Tank or Thomas the Dank Engine and Biggie Smalls and somebody that I have to assume is an unemployed physicist doing whatever the hell. First off, I'm curious into like what people would think, like, you have Thomas, we have Biggie, we have physics, and what the hell could you possibly come up with? Well, you come up with Thomas the Tank Engine stunts. Mm-hmm. So we have Thomas the Tank Engine going down a track doing stunts. And the video itself, I think, came out a few days ago on YouTube from the channel 5 Mad Movie Makers with a number 5 at the beginning, just Thomas train stunts. And it's great as it is. It's great, but it's not why we love the internet alone. We should say. Instead, we have to go all the way back to 2012, where we find a mashup by Norkom, Norkom, on YouTube, and he does whatever the hell this is. Motherfuckers, come on, motherfuckers, come on. This is Thomas train stunts. This is Thomas riding down the track. He goes over a little jump, and it's just.
And the music.
It's just so amazing. He like grinds on a thing, does a barrel roll. Not a barrel roll, but a front flip.
Like he does a barrel roll.
Yeah, he does a barrel roll. Yeah, there's the barrel roll.
That's what you're talking about.
And that is amazing. Hits a bridge, knocks the bridge down, and then continues.
It's like watching
over.
Like dominoes, but better. Because it's Thomas. And there's another and train.
The red train is probably my favorite.
Is it James?
I don't know. But then, when it does the crisscross, notice that Thomas slows down after the last one so the red one can get in front.
It's pretty amazing.
It's teamwork.
This is fucking brilliant.
But they have to be, and to go over these hills, they have to go at the same time. And they have to go with the right amount of force.
Oh, this one's Parkin. He's done.
It parks.
But Thomas loops.
He does a loop. Jumps over other trains. I've watched
just,
this at
just
least.
Just hearing, come on, motherfuckers, come on, while Thomas is doing his thing.
Thomas is doing stunts.
And Thomas is Parkin.
I've watched this video no fewer than 25 times between last night and today because it is the best thing I think I've ever seen, and
it's amazing. I mean,
we'll say the best thing I've ever seen this week because sure something next week will eclipse. I don't know how.
I don't know, but I know we were on the same page because when I messaged you, do you have a reason why you love the internet? You responded with this, and I was just kind of waiting to see if you had something.
It was still on my clipboard. Like, I still had it, like, copy-pasted, ready to go to anybody.
Yeah.
I've been sending it to people all night, like, oh, my God, like, did you see this? This is so funny.
And I had it in a browser tab ready to send it to you, but I figured, like, I mean, I'm glad that our great minds just thought alike here because, yeah, this week, this is the internet winner for the week. So congratulations, Thomas, the Dank Engine.
The Dank Engine. And there's also a Thomas the Dank Engine subreddit that I found when trying to find the source for this. And I mean, it's, I guess, everything that you could possibly imagine.
Mm-hmm. Everything.
The top post is my reaction when friends say posting Thomas the Tank Engine memes is childish. It's a sad train face, just the train face on a boxcar. So what happened to them? It is has no memes for you. Like, of course.
Of course. So people can watch this video that we just talked about and then fall down a Thomas the Dank Engine rabbit hole. And then they're like, oh, thank you, Natalie and Dan, for introducing us to this. Let's give you money. And then their name can be read with all the patrons that you're going to read.
Oh, my God. The top all time on that subreddit is...
What is it?
It's Childish Gambino mashed up with it, and it's so, oh my God, it's so amazing. There are so many mashups on this. Oh my God, I don't know that I'm going to do anything with the rest of my day.
I know what you're doing for the rest of the day. It's 2:42 in the afternoon, so if you could, like, I don't know, maybe just get shut, like throw this episode together, but then you can, you know, just Thomas it up.
No,
for the
I'm
rest
going
of the
to,
day.
I am going to, I just sent you a link to a shirt that's on, again, one of the top posts.
Oh my God.
Our Thomas the Dank Engine dude with, like,
that is the thing.
A formidable beard with what maybe his
own face. He made a shirt
face?
Of himself. Yeah. That's
okay.
His own
that,
face.
I couldn't tell because the hair looks a little
face.
Different.
No, he put
front.
His face on Thomas. He put his face
and,
on Thomas.
And it says, let's party, and like
do
really
you,
shitty
do you
like
to,
word art.
Do you want me to make that for you for your birthday?
I,
for your next birthday? You want that?
I don't know that I don't is the
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, so, right. So we'll keep it out there as an option. Like it could happen.
It is. Oh my God, that is amazing. Because yeah. The thing about that though, is you wear a shirt like that. Because I have a shirt that has a... cat with like a little like Roman crown, like Caesar type crown on his head,
yeah.
Wearing glasses, riding a llama corn while UFOs fly overhead, and there's a rainbow in the background. And I want to be left alone when I go to the store because people are awful, but everybody feels like they have to talk to me and go, where did you find that? And I go, literally, like Google like llama corn, cat riding llama corn, and you'll find it. But people talk to me and as like I said, as we know, I don't want to talk to strangers because strangers are
stranger
scary.
Danger.
But people who are not scary include, but are not limited to, Tattoos and Bones, Ryan Wimmer, Ben Davis, Nathan Dickey, Alice, Cynthia Francis, Michael Baldwin, Frank Olek. I should have tried to pronounce his name before I just read it. Frank O, Jeff Brimack, Michael Costa, Losing Lab, Magnus Borns, Zav Hannah Carpenter, Felix, another one, Sangui, I think, Chris Noble, Michael Troll, Michael Bazzacco, Sarah Moderal, and Jose Gonzalez. And sorry if I said your name wrong. Maybe get a simpler name. I mean, this is America after all, right?
Am I wrong?
This is America. I mean,
you're right. You're right. That's a correct statement that it is.
You are on the record now.
I'm on the record as saying this is
America. No, but if I said your name, I'm sorry. Like, you can send me a message and yell at me, and I'll do it better next week. Those are our beloved patrons. You can become a patron yourself at patreon.com/TSEpodcast to get access to early episodes, commercial-free episodes, and other things that we put up on there. You could also follow us on scienceenthusiastpodcast.com, all the Facebook pages. We're launching a new website, skepticalkitten.com. It's going to have cats and skeptic kind of stuff, but mostly it's going to be cats and lots of cats. But that'll be up at some point over the next few days. We'll see how that goes. What else?
I'll give a quote, and then we'll wrap this up.
All right. Hit us with a quote.
Okay. If someone doesn't value evidence, what evidence are you going to provide to prove that they should value it? If someone doesn't value logic, what logical argument could you provide to show the importance of logic? That's Sam Harris.
Yeah.
Yeah. Something to think about.
It's like talking to any anti-vaxxer, talking to any anti-GMO, and any sort of anti-climate change, or not, everybody should be anti-climate change, but climate change deniers, or any person who subscribes to any type of religion.
Yeah, and it's pretty much me trying to talk to anybody who thinks that my movie was funded by Monsanto.
It wasn't? Did we just lie to our listeners at the beginning of the episode by saying that we were supported by Monsanto?
We did. And we're sorry.
You know, I will have you know that I have mailed stickers to employees of Monsanto, and at least one order went directly to Monsanto.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess it's not from Monsanto, it's from employees. It's from Monsanto.
Yeah.
So, I mean, number one, thank
you.
Scienceenthusiast.com/store. But
you're part of the Shillspiracy.
I'm okay with that because
me too.
You know what's cool about it?
What's cool about it?
Money.
Money. Money. That's it. Money is cool. And so we'll be back next week, maybe with our interview with David Alvarado about the Bill Nye film.
Well, see, we have David Alvarado. Who else?
We have such a
backlog. Right, David Alvarado, Chris Johnson, Cosmic Skeptic, Carol Churcha. Trevor Valley, I mean, forever ago.
Yeah, I know. And we have and Marissa McCool and I did an interview together. Like there's a lot of stuff. So if you're listening and we've interviewed you, your interviews are just considered evergreen content, and we'll be out. And we love you. And yeah.
Well, David Smalley said he'll come on the show. Hemant Mehta, Friendly Atheist, said he'll come on the show too. So I mean, we don't have
Anthony enough Magnabosco. Time. I know. There's so many people. And which is, you know what, honestly though, I would rather have it like this, where there's so many awesome people that we've talked to and are going to talk to, than a lack of that.
Instead of posting, hey, I need a guest this week. Anyone want to come on my show?
So we'll be back next week. And Jeff, our friend Jeff from former friend or former guest of the show.
He's a patron, damn it.
No.
He slept at my house a couple nights.
Former guest is what I was going to say. Oh, fuck. God damn it, Natalie. but what did he say? He said something about that we should end every show by saying that we're keeping it professional, or that it was super professional. Because I think I must have said that to you last time. Because you sounded really professional last time.
It was organized. My life was not falling apart that week. So yeah. I felt good that week. And then, I mean, And then, of course, the next week happened. So,
yeah, as it does, weeks do happen.
Is he joking? Is he serious? I mean, you'll never know.
Who knows? Stay tuned next week and find out. There's the clickbait to end on. That's a wrap. There's so many awesome people that we've talked to and are going to talk to, than a lack of that.
Instead of posting, hey, I need a guest this week. Anyone want to come on my show?
So, so we'll be back next week.
The music you heard tonight was written and performed by Adam Johnson and was used with his permission. You can contact Adam at adamjohnsondc@gmail.com. This podcast is property of Not Narrow or Straight, LLC, all rights reserved.